I sent the invaders back to their own planet. Of course, I'll need the Matrix, the jury rig, a time loop, but that's...
But how have we won? We've fought no one but a few guards.
Well, it can't always be like the relief of Mafeking, you know.
Right.
Don't shout at him. Don't shout.
Welcome to Valor, the journey from invasion to 0 hour. I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bess.
In this episode, we properly say goodbye to First Strike, the invasion podcast, and we set the stage for 0 hour strikes, which begins next month.
This is exciting. And we're doing all this through Valor.
Yes. So we're looking at a series that bridges the gap between, well, the two DC crossovers we're meant to cover. So we'll be reading from your final feedback as well on the Invasion podcast, on the finale. Yeah. And you will have noticed we took a substantial 6 to 7 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
a break after the Invasion finale to work on other things and get ready as much as we could for the next step. So thanks for hanging in there.
It's just a little break. It's just a little break.
We did other things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you did other things. I just waited.
Wait, you're and planning other things, though.
Yeah, yeah. I'm planning other things. Unfortunately, not with you. This is it's a weird thing.
Well, it's not unfortunate, is it?
Well, it's not.
I work with others as well.
You what?
I work with others.
Really? Aw. No, I'm kidding. I'm working on something with Fred. I think you met Fred a couple times in another podcast, but I'm going to be working with him. It's going to be fun.
I met him a long time ago. I
mean, yeah,
he's in our circle of friends, and we'll get more news on that later, I imagine.
Yeah, of course.
It's like a summer project.
It's a summer project.
Watch for it at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Today we're looking at the Valor series, a series that ran 23 issues from 1992 to 1994, and it's because it is the perfect bridge between crossovers. Valor, or Largand, or some of you still call him Mon-El, premiered after his father, one of the Daxamite observers, sacrificed his life during invasion, which inspired him to become a hero and join the Acronym Legion for a couple of years, where Vrildox creates an anti-lead serum for him. He then plays a significant part in the Eclipso, the Darkness Within crossover, which spins him off into his own series by Robert Lauren Fleming, Mark Bright, and Al Gordon, the first issue of which is an Eclipso epilogue. We'll go through the series up to, but excluding the last couple issues, which really do tie in into 0 hour per se. We'll focus mostly on how the series ties back to Invasion and prepares us for 0 hour. But first, Bess, what did you think of Valor as a character, as a book?
Well, yeah, I'm one of those who still call them Mon-El. Mm-hmm. You know,
sure.
Because
he will be Mon-El,
but he's not Mon-El right now. You know, I don't know where to start with this
because okay.
it's so 90s. Everything about this thing is 90s. I mean, big shoulder pads, weird spiky but not spiky hair. You know, everything tries to be cool, and it that's how it starts off. I think. You know, we see he can, you know, bring in his cape and stuff like that. And
then, yeah, it goes back into the...
Yeah, into his little roundy things. There's just so much 90s stuff. I mean, all the girls are all built on the same shape. They all have 17-foot legs and... I don't know. It was kind of not a shock because I started reading other things, you know, not just Invasion, other things. And I come back to this time period. It kind of shocked me. To see all this stuff, but all in all, I kind of enjoyed everything from Valor. How he starts off as something I really didn't like in the first issues, and became, well, Valor or Mon-El or the inspiration. It's kind of cool.
You know what it reminds me of? Wally West.
Exactly.
Who started off the character long before he is the hero we know he'll become, or that he should be, and really a hero with feet of clay. I mean, in the first half of the series, he gets into fights.
For nothing.
For nothing. He fights Supergirl, he fights Lobo, and it's just like, what is this? It's an entire issue of just fighting between
exactly.
good guys, basically.
Yeah, I thought I was reading some old Marvel comics.
Except they don't team up at the end.
No, exactly. You know, but he's like, I mean, he sucker punches Lobo, which is a no-no, by the way.
Well,
you don't.
I respect him for it.
I thought he was kind of dumb. Why are you sucker punching a guy?
Yeah, he flies off the handle. If people know Mon-El from the Legion, then this is a bit of a shock.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's, oh, okay, he's this punk kid. He's very immature. And this is about him gaining maturity Though it's not clear he ever does, because the series kind of...
Yeah, it kind of fills a little
bit. Yeah, yeah. The continuity collapses towards the end there.
Yeah, but it's a coming-of-age story.
Mm, yeah.
Where he grows up, basically, and he learns to love. And he learns to care. And he learns to not punch people before you talk.
Yeah, no, that's true. Because he does have the, you know, like a Spider-Man. His dad died, inspired him to do good. And exactly. He's out there, he's doing it. But he's also, at this point, kind of haunted by the fact that he was possessed by Eclipso.
Yeah.
And before that, was working for Drill Docs and Legion, mm-hmm. who really screwed him over and over again.
Yeah.
And does so a couple times in
now
this.
That's Drill Docs.
It is Drill Docs. So maybe he's a little... You know, untrusting.
Well, can't blame him.
Yeah, exactly.
So. And he's a mechanic.
But the series really, as we'll see, we'll talk about like chunks of it. The series is kind of hurt by the fact that, I don't know how this necessarily happened. We'll talk about it right midpoint. But Robert Lauren Fleming, who is writing this, was not able to carry the entire story to its end. At some point, he left the book. Zero Hour was coming. It was either, you know, I've heard him say, or I haven't, you know, in person, but, you know, I've heard that.
Through the grapevine.
Yeah. I've heard that he said that with Zero Hour coming, it just destroyed everything he wanted to do. So he left the book. I don't know. I mean, there's like a year between Zero Hour and the time that he left. So I'm not sure how much of that is true, or if he was put off the book because there were other plans for the Legion and Valor. I have no idea.
But, I mean, still, it's a valid questioning. I mean, did he leave? Was Zero Hour just a premise to leave early because he didn't want to finish or didn't know how to finish? Or, you know, finishing's a big thing.
I mean, he's setting up things that then are resolved very, very quickly or just disappear. So, you know, when you read Valor, you know what? It's a quick read. I read like the 21 issues. It's a page turner. But I have to say, especially once Fleming is off the book, because then you can tell it's like a ramp up for something big. It's more epic. It's like there's time distortions. We're heading for Zero Hour. Yeah. It felt more exciting then.
That part was really nice. Well, not that the rest wasn't nice, but that part where you see the clash between Largan and Mon-El, or, you know, Valor, or whatever you want to call him later.
What he needs to become.
Yeah, exactly. And when you see that dichotomy, that paradox, that road he has to take to get to that end point, that's when it gets interesting, because we know what the end game is. You know, so how is he going to get there? We have no idea. That's a very interesting part there. I really enjoyed that.
So if we look at the series in chunks, let's say like the first four issues of this are the setup. Valor fights off the last remnants of Eclipso. He builds a memorial to his father. And Luthor gets him out of his hair by, at this point he's got hair, by giving him a spaceship that he rebuilds, Largan rebuids with Daxamite know-how. He calls it the Pilgrim One, which includes an artificial intelligence nominally loyal to LexCorp called Babbage. Valor next heads for Legion HQ to get more anti-lead serum and gets his warp drive in order, which all makes him as independent as a hero needs to be, except for Vril Dog screws him over for, you know, the next chunk of it. The serum's not great, but we find out that's not really Vril's fault. He sets up the warp drive so that everybody wants to get rid of Largan.
Which is a weird thing. I don't know how well he fares as a solitary hero.
Mm-hmm.
Because I never saw Mon-El as a solitary hero. He was always within the Legion of Superheroes or teaming up with Superman or. Mm-hmm. But just Lar all alone kind of felt weird. And it still feels weird. He's being pushed away by everybody, but kind of feels weird.
They're kind of making him, and the premise, they're making him this cosmic hero, and it is a post-invasion world where we've set up what's out there. It's more than just the Omega Men. We've set up what's out there in the universe in the 20th century. So Mon-El is going to explore that.
Yeah. Space is so big. I mean, you can have the Green Lantern Corps. You can have these guys floating around and still explore everything. But in the first chunks where they're trying to basically set up the universe they're going to play within. The Valor book felt like a, you know, Blasters book or a Legion book or
anything. And Fleming did write Blasters, that Blasters special.
Or a Supergirl Matrix book, yeah. Or a orange-haired Lex Luthor Jr. Book. You know,
so too many guest stars for you?
Well, the focus was always on somebody else. You know, you had Valor at the beginning of the book saying, hey, I'm going to do something, and then we just basically follow Supergirl, or we follow Blasters, or
Lobo,
or anybody else during the whole issue. And then Valor just comes in at the end.
I mean, you're kind of right about even the point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
Is not strictly Valor's.
Absolutely.
Because there's one bit I really like when he goes back to the Legion HQ in these first four issues. Goes back to Legion HQ on Cairn. You know, he gets into trouble with Lobo. And there's like this multi-page sequence where Lobo kills him in different ways. And it always starts like, it's Lobo thinking, basically fantasizing about killing Valor. Yeah. So, you know, he pushes a natum bomb in his throat kind of thing.
Very cartoony, very funny.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's like pages from his own Mature Readers series kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the next page, he's saying, oh, crap, I don't have a nuke. So then he thinks of another way. Yeah. So there's like this comedy sequence out of a Lobo book in the middle of this.
It's totally from Lobo's point of view. And that's true for a couple of issues where the Blasters are in there.
Yeah. I think they're in there for a while. Five through eight.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see what the Blasters are up to after that special. Catches up to them. Now they've got costumes. I mean, they've been living a life that we haven't seen, that Fleming was not able to tell. So he's catching us up rather quickly. And
they have Mac-Gin suits. They still have horrible powers. They're basically Doom Patrol in space.
And they're left with, or the bad Doom Patrol, and they're left with, again, it's like it ends with no resolution.
Yeah.
The mom is missing and that's it. Ask for more, guys. And nobody asks for more.
But it was kind of weirdly fun to see the Blasters after this long hiatus.
Mm.
To see, you know, the little dust devil kid and, you know.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun to see him. But three whole issues.
Four. Yeah.
Four issues. Yeah, it was kind of.
There's one of those issues where they're not really featured prominently. But by this point, the art has shifted.
Yeah.
Mark Bright's left. And Jeffrey Moore and Trevor Scott are taking over and doing most of the art for the next chunk. It's very invasion-y because Drill Dogs has tricked Valor into showing up at Starlag 2, which is the next evolution in the same prison where they were all captured in Invasion.
Yeah, and you're going to hear Starlag 2 often, because they refer to it as Starlag 2 all the time.
Never just Starlag.
Never just Starlag.
The new Starlag.
Never.
No, Starlag 2. So that's where he sends a distress signal. His powers are starting to go wonky at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
So that's I don't even know what Fleming had in mind, because it's going to be another writer giving us the answer.
That part was kind of weird because I mean, you kind of see it coming. They want to separate Superman and Mon-El or Valor. They're very similar, but they're, you know, one's a Daxamite, the other one's a Kryptonian.
Mm-hmm.
You should differentiate these guys because they're basically copies in the old books and they're basically the same thing. I get it. You want to... And post-invasion, they kind of downshifted the powers a little bit. Everybody's a little bit less powerful. So, I mean, I get it. But the powers were going kind of weird.
Come on, Bass. He's got laser vision, not heat vision.
I know. That kind of bugged me. I was like, why? Stop saying laser vision, you Mon-El wannabe. But yeah.
I think the big difference is that he's an engineer.
Yeah.
He's a lot more.
I like to call him a mechanic, but yeah, he's an engineer.
Yeah, he's a mechanic. So, you know.
Yeah, but.
I mean, there's differences. I mean, he's supposed to be, you know what? He's more of a Superboy than a Superman.
Big time.
I mean, with the attitude and then you're doing things that they couldn't do with Connor.
Did Connor exist at this point?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. This is post, Superman's just died in return.
Yeah, so, this is Mullet Superman.
So yeah, we're not going to call him Connor because that's not his name yet. There is a Superboy in the world.
Yeah. And he has this leather jacket and shades and
side fade. Fade, yeah.
The uncool Superboy. Because I like black shirt, jeans, Superboy.
Okay, well, I like Connor. I like them. I like the original.
I didn't like the, you know, I mean, belts and.
He's really of his day, but.
But yeah, he's very much Superboy and the whole powers going wonky just felt a bit as if they didn't know where they were going, and maybe nobody really, I don't know, nobody wrote it down or something. You know, it felt kind of electric Superman.
Mm. I mean, this whole storyline with Starlag 2, he calls for help, Blasters come in to help. But it also has a rare appearance by the Unimaginable, which was an old JLA villain.
Yeah.
You're getting from this throughout. It's not just like the Lobo sequence earlier. Fleming is a humorist. Yeah. He worked on Ambush Bug with Keith Giffen.
Yeah, there's a lot of funnies in there.
Yeah. I mean, there's like, you're looking at the list of prisoners and Gandalf is in there and there is a, Goo Goo Gajoob. character. Part of the cells, there's like a gelatinous cube from D&D to trap people. So the blasters kind of fit, but the blasters aren't allowed to be as transgressively meta as they were in their own book. And the art isn't as fun or quirky for them. I mean, we only saw that one special.
Yeah, exactly.
And they had a look to them. Yeah. And here it's a little stiff for me.
Stiff is a good word.
Yeah. So I don't think that this is like relaunches the blasters in any kind of way.
No, I wouldn't think so. And you know what this was missing, though? The new Guardians. I'm kidding. I just hated these guys.
All of these teams. Just like by the numbers kind of teams. Yeah, I guess the blasters did become that. And then there's like this weird sequence when they finally... We leave them to their fate, which is aboard Starlag 2, which is flying away. Then we have this... I'm going to call it an interruption. It was, you know, it's Valor trying to save a woman from the supernova. The sun's going to blow and these... And then there's like this weird Looney Tunes sequence where...
Yeah, there are two creatures stranded on...
There's like a super rare creature, which is kind of a Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, shoves it in a bucket.
And she didn't really need help. And it's just, it's over. And it's also in the Starlag thing. You were talking about like a Green Lantern. In the Starlag thing, he gets another supporting cast member, which is this old Green Lantern, powerless Green Lantern that was in Starlag as well. The Green Lantern joins him aboard Pilgrim 1. Blasters are gone. Unimaginable is escaped. And it just kind of ends there because issue 9 is like a fill-in issue by Mark Waid.
Yeah.
It's kind of a sort of humorous kind of story where he fights, again, goes off the handle, gets into trouble.
Yeah.
Because he's not very wise. And he fights a Dark Star that will show up in DC Trinity, which is an event that was coming up. So it's like setting up this random Dark Star character to be one of the Dark Stars in Trinity. Trinity was like...
That's a long shot.
Trinity was a crossover between the Green Lantern Corps, acronym Legion, and the Dark Stars, which were the three space police forces. So they get together to do a thing. But they needed to introduce a few characters, I guess. Not that Green Lantern, but that Dark Star.
That Dark Star.
So it feels like, when is this happening? But they reference the past, and then later they reference the story. So, and then we're back to the Unimaginable in issue 10, and it's like Fleming's last issue. He fixes the whole thing. The Green Lantern wasn't an old man. He was a woman. She's...
She's brought back by...
Unimaginable.
Yeah, Ebony Maw with the Reality Stone.
Basically re-usened.
Yeah.
Tells her she's got a sad story about her world being destroyed by the Unimaginable. Her child burning with her world. She brings the Unimaginable to the Starlag. And because she's also an energy being in there...
There's a lot of stuff. There's so much to unpack.
And actually, Mark Waid finishes this story because it's really issue 10 and 11 that tells this.
Yeah.
So Fleming just leaves in the middle of things. And Mark Waid comes in. Not a bad pick, of course.
Hey, not a bad choice. He had weird materials to work with.
And then he immediately brings in the Legion. So you've got... And this is a tough one to explain to people, but we're in the middle of the 5 years later era of Legion. Not in the middle, towards the end, of course, because Zero Hour is going to put an end to that.
Yeah.
And at this point, there are two Legions in the future. There is the adult Legion, the dark dystopian Legion, of which Valor is a member. And then there's like these temporal clones of young Legionnaires... Like circa 1968.
Yeah.
Who have been brought back by Dominator experiments or something. They're their own Legion. So the old Legion is patrolling the universe and the young Legion, which we call the SW6 Legion, which was the name of their clone batch.
Okay.
Is starring in a book called Legionnaires. And they're on Earth, or really New Earth, because Earth is blown up. It's a dystopia. So they're on like this artificial world and they're patrolling that. And it's these kids, who have all the memories of the Legion because they're temporal clones. They're not clones, they're temporal clones.
Okay.
So they're like taken out of time duplicates.
Okay.
Or perhaps the adult Legion are the duplicates and these kids are the real one, the real thing.
Either way, yeah. Somebody's a duplicate and yeah. there's a temporal mishap.
So Mark Waid, so you can already see that there's like problems with the timeline.
Yeah.
And Mark Waid introduces them as in the future talking about Valor and saying, oh, Valor, he did this, he did that. And so we know the history. If we didn't know the history, now we know the history that he is in this timeline. Of course, not the pre-crisis timeline. In the pre-crisis timeline, Mon-El is sent to the Phantom Zone to save his life from blood poisoning by Superboy. 1,000 years later, the Legion revives him and he joins. That's not possible in a new timeline because there's no Superboy and he doesn't meet Mon-El in his youth or anything. So it's Valor who, it's the whole invasion story. How does he get into the Phantom Zone, now called the Stasis Zone? and it's because this villainous Glorith, who in this timeline has replaced the Time Trapper. She's a magician that uses time.
Yeah.
She's bumped off the Time Trapper, created her own timeline, which has differences like Superman and Supergirl, Superboy and Supergirl were never part of the Legion. Other people were. And so in that context, she's the one who sends Valor to the Stasis Zone in an act of jealousy because she's fallen in love with him. He rejects her. That's what we know. But this all happens, supposedly, after Valor has seeded all the worlds that the Legion comes from, as we've talked about on the Invasion show at some point. I mean, I wrote this up for the Legion of Super Bloggers at one point. It's like, it's excessively complicated and doesn't end there because there will be future iterations of Valor.
Thank God they put an end to the multiverse with Crisis on Infinite Earth.
So anyway, at the end of this, even though we've got the Legionnaires in there as sort of a precursor, the Fleming storylines are all ended, except for the power snafu stuff, are all ended by issue 11. From then on, it's a Legion book. It really is. So from issue 12 to 17 is a storyline called DOA, Dead on Arrival. It's really the story of how we met Glorith. Mm-hmm. And so we're heading for that future.
This is where the tone change happens also.
Mm.
There's, you know, all the funnies, all the gags and the, you know, little references kind of all stop at this point. We have, you know, darker, you know, shading on one side of his face type art, and the writing is a bit darker also.
Yeah, there's less of that comedy.
Yeah.
Because in this, I mean, he returns to Daxam, where he learns that the Daxamite armada that helped Earth during invasion came back with a plague. It's actually lead poisoning. Oh no. Which has always been kind of ridiculous. It's not like lead radiates.
No, exactly.
But still, it's, you know, that's the conceit of Daxam. So again, we've got an invasion sequel in there showing what happened later. At the end of issue 13, Valor is wiped from the Legionnaires' databanks, but not their memories, or not yet. So that's progressive. Because Dragon Maj was like a young member who didn't exist at the same time as Valor. He's the first to forget. So all through this, Valor has a new, I'm going to say girlfriend, but supporting cast member who is called Lori. Now, she's got blonde hair. She likes to dress in purple. You make your own connection. There is a like a Time Trapper figure in, you know, we see pages where like a Time Trapper with the big purple robes looking in on Valor and laughing maniacally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Connect the dots.
So Lori's in there.
Yeah. Lori is in there. And then issue 14, Waid is joined by Colleen Doran and Misha McDowell on art, which will last until through the end. Mm-hmm. So there, after not getting help on Earth, so we got like the JLA, just to make it less about Valor.
Yeah. We have the JLA and the Legion of Superheroes.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So you can't get help from them about his wonky powers, and really he's dying. This is what we find out. DOA. I mean, it's named after a famous film noir where a guy has like 24 hours to figure out his own murder because he's been poisoned.
He's dead on arrival. He meets Superman,
who tells him, don't get any cure.
Yeah.
Don't ask help.
Yeah.
What is this?
Superman's no help.
Yeah. I died and I came back, so you know, anything's possible.
Yeah, this is a comic book. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not Deadpool.
So Valor decides to go out in a blaze of glory and has Lori pilot the ship to a planet with no hope. The planet is Baldur. For Legion fans, that's Glorit's home world.
Yeah.
Oh! So there they become sort of god kings because they fix all the problems, the Superman 4, the quest for peace, the shit out of that, and are set up as kings, which is all part of Glorith's plan to corrupt Valor, so become a consort to her, who is... She herself is a temporal world conqueror. So in number 16, a very weak and emaciated Valor follows Lori into another dimension where a time trapper figure admonishes her for Valor not having succumbed enough to temptation. But it turns out the time trapper is Lori, because Lori is short for Glorith. People who are fans of the reboot Legion will recognize here that Lori Morning was a character in that series, a little girl who was lost in time, who had connections to the Time Trapper, and who, perhaps, if the creative team had been quick enough with their subplots before another team took over, would have become Glorith. This little girl was Glorith. So there's that connection here for the few people who'd read Valor.
If you can't follow, just watch Doctor Who and Riversong's whole... Because it's very similar
to how
Riversong and...
Yeah.
I think. A little bit.
So she's been manipulating things from the beginning. Why has the powers gone wonky? The serum is failing. Why is it failing? Because she temporally decayed it. So at the end of that, Glorith lets Valor die when he refuses her, changing history and voiding the Legion.
Dum, dum, dum.
Because now he hasn't seeded the world. He cannot act as inspiration for anyone. He's just like this young hero who died early.
Yeah. He'll never become Valor in a sense.
He will never become Valor, the seeder of worlds.
Yeah.
And then the adult Valor arrives from the future. In an issue of Legion, he'd been sent back and never returned. Well, here he is. But he sees himself as dead. So, you know, issue 18 has that homage to Crisis where Superman is holding Supergirl, Crisis number 8.
Oh, they like that.
They do that a lot.
A lot.
And here it's like Mon-El holding Mon-El.
Yeah. And it works. And it works. It made me smile.
I like that. The variations on that cover. 18 through 21, but really 18 through 23, is the part where history just crumbles, where it's just a big paradox.
Yeah, time is all over the place. And...
Yeah, so Valor is asked to redo his entire career so that time is not... History isn't changed.
Yeah.
Just take the place of your younger self and do it all. Except... History really is crumbling, and he's got 48 hours to do it. To do it all.
He's DOA.
To build his entire legend. So then he meets some Kuns, and, you know, he's supposed to set them back technologically decades or something.
Yeah.
By fighting them. So even though he's trying to avoid it because he doesn't want to spend that 1,000 years in the stasis zone, he sort of has to. Except then it's accelerated and you got, you know, Wave Rider and linear men coming in. All the temporal police are after him to either succeed or get the hell out. And we just sacrifice the Legion's future.
It's quite the gambit there.
So you can tell. 0 hours coming. People from the Legion are disappearing, forgetting stuff. Changes to the timeline are happening all over the place in this part. And from issue 20, you got Kurt Busiek, who comes in to write for Wade. I mean... Based on Wade's cocktail napkins. That's always how I interpret special thanks to Mark Wade.
Cocktail napkin.
Especially when somebody's continuing a story like that. Although Wade is erroneously still credited on the covers.
Really?
So there's something that happened there, I guess.
Probably outlined the, you know, the whole thing.
Yeah. He doesn't get a plot credit, though. So at the end of that, there are changes to history. He notices because he's doing things earlier on. He saves... The people who will become Cosmic Boys people, the Brawlians. In fact, their leader, called Kryn Magnar, seems to be the common ancestor of Cosmic Boy, Rock Kryn, and Magno, who's like the villain, because that's what he looks like. They're more warriorly at this point in their lives. And I mean, so it causes all sorts of problems. Eventually, the paradox makes it that, you know, Valor is sort of split into... various selves in living in different seconds of his life or something in between moments.
Well, he has 48 hours.
And then,
a lifetime of work.
That allows him to do that. The many, many Valors. I mean, this is like a big Doctor Who finale. Really what it is.
Really, that's what it is. It's very wibbly wobbly. You know, it's timey wimey. I kind of felt Doctor Who-ish when I was reading it.
Mm-hmm.
But not as Doctor Who-ish. Not as fun, but...
It was the sort of temporal shenanigans that we expect from Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, exactly. If I never watched Doctor Who, I would have probably been completely weirded out. But weird temporal sci-fi kind of works for me, you know? But yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, wow, if I never met Doctor Who, you know, I never would have... Probably would have closed that book up.
Came out in 94.
Yeah.
Before that brand of Doctor Who, I guess. Yeah, so at the end of that, they're going, well, we're too late for the entire continuum. So even though they seem to save that moment in history, it's not going to work out.
No.
There's not, you know, the timeline is foobar. And one of the things that will be a victim of Zero Hour is the Legion continuity. That's going to get reset. The first major time, I guess.
That's what happens when you live in the future. I mean, timelines.
But somehow, like, this version of Valor will go on. I mean, the youthful one will be returned, I guess, because I remember... I mean, I read the entire reboot Legion, or almost all of it, for the Legion of Super Bloggers. I cover it with our friend Shotgun.
Yeah.
And Valor shows up in that, and he's got Babbage, he's got the space car.
So he's young Valor and...
Young Valor.
Retractable...
Mm-hmm. And they're like, they create a different, for the reboot, they will create a different origin of why he goes into the stasis zone.
Again,
because there's still no Superboy. Or there is, but it's Connors.
Well, yeah, it's Connors. So, it's
Superman. And they do play with that. Like, there's a story where, there will be a story, which we won't cover because it's like way past.
Yeah.
Post Zero Hour, where the Legion meets Superboy, and I think it's pretty cool, or don't. Depending. And Valor shows up, and by the end of that, Valor's got to be put in the stasis zone.
Oh.
And then he wakes up on the other end, and he gets mobbed by all the people who are like, holy crap, Valor! The cedar of our world! And he changes his name to Mon-El to hide.
Oh, wow.
Not to be the returned Valor, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they always find a way to get back to that concept, but to get Mon-El into the Legion... If you don't have a viable young Superman, it's always going to be a problem. So post-Infinite Crisis, they brought all that back anyways. Superman was once again Superboy in his youth, although he mostly operated with the Legion and not in the real way in the 20th century, 21st century. So anyway, it's all fixed.
It's all fixed.
But it was screwed up for at least, you know, 15 years.
Well, Well, how do you... Probably... There was probably a staff meeting once where somebody said... You know what? You could have a Superboy. Only he acts as Superboy in the future, comes back to the present, and he's, you know, hiding. He's not being Superboy. Probably somebody said, nah, that'll never work. But that was the fix all along. Instead, no, they just changed the Legion of Superheroes all the time.
Yeah, and that's what they did for the cartoon series. Any last thoughts on Valor, on this bridge between two series?
Well, it was a bridge. Was a bridge between the two series.
It even mentions Zero Hour.
Oh, yeah.
At that end of that issue. So there's like two issues left that basically have, you know, Zero Hour happening.
I'm not sure I'm prepared with this bridge because I never read Zero Hour.
Right.
So I'm going to be coming in cold, green. So I don't feel like I'm prepared.
You're not.
For Zero Hour?
You absolutely are not.
But I do feel like...
You're not prepared for the disappointment. You're not prepared.
You know what?
I will not agree with everything that happens in Zero Hour.
But I do feel like I've bridged a gap between two times and two crises.
Yeah. They really did include a lot of invasion stuff for something that happens like three, four years later.
Big time. It really is the continuity. And I kind of dug it because... You know, we had this little break. I didn't read anything invasion related. It was fun. There were a lot of smiles, you know, every time they mentioned something or now we call them Easter eggs from invasion. I was like, yeah, cool. This is fun. So I enjoyed it. It does get kind of weird at the end, kind of wonky, kind of we don't know where we're going or we're just going to throw everything because it's going to be destroyed.
Yeah. Typical... World's about to end. You know, editorial's about to come down on us. Let's just rush ourselves out of here.
Yeah.
Or let's get different writers in to do our dirty business.
Yeah.
That's like...
And it kind of feels like if I told you, all right, Siskoid, you can do anything you want with Captain Boomerang.
Okay. Sure.
All right. And you're already writing something and all of a sudden you get this opened wide space of creativity. and you're stuck in this one story you're writing, and all of a sudden everything opens. It's like all of a sudden that you don't know where you're going. You can do anything, but you can't keep going with what you're doing. So you can do anything from now on. And most of us, we just go blank. We don't know what we want. So, and that's how it feels. It feels like they're just throwing in stuff to maybe start that little flame, and it never really
goes. Well, if you know that there's, like, it's going to be canceled. Valor's canceled after this. His entire existence is in question because of changes that they've already decided to make after Zero Hour. And I don't know how early they started to do this. You know, is it if Fleming leaves a year from the end, is it like a year in the making? At DC, is the buzz is... Crisis didn't fix everything. Shit. You know, maybe we should do it like a little crisis, a little mini crisis, a crisis in time. It's just like fix history where it's screwed up. And it's nowhere more screwed up than in the Legion stuff. Thanks, Keith Giffen, for making the Legion unusable. So, I mean, yeah. is that the talk? Because he leaves Legion as well. You know, other people continue that dystopian future. But what is the feeling there? Does Robert Lawrence Lang go, if this is going to be canceled in a year's time and I got to spend most of that killing off the hero and setting things up for temporal shenanigans, maybe even have to sit down with the Legion writers to make sure it all makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Yeah. Well, it's not very appealing. If you're a writer, that's not very appealing.
But, I mean, it's work for hire. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that happens, which is always why I like smaller books, out of the way books more than the tentpole ones. You don't want to read Justice League because it's going to have to cross over with everything all the time and get interrupted. And if somebody's trying to tell a story, it's going to be screwed up at some point because of crossovers or using characters from other, other franchises. But Valor should be the small book. Right? It's like exactly. He's alone. He's in the universe. I mean, what are his chances of crossing over with other people? Well, we found out.
He crosses over with everybody.
And even so, I think that's the stuff that's exciting anyway.
Yeah, that's
more than, but perhaps I'm saying that because all the characters that were introduced in the first year have nowhere to go. They lose their writer. They lose their motivation. Any reason for being. So. It is a very flawed series. It's a fun one.
Yeah.
But it is.
There's a lot of action. If you like looking at pictures with things blowing up and hey, there's.
It has humor. There's interest there. But eventually it just falls apart because of editorial mandate and because of the series that we're going to be covering in our next show. Let's take a break for promos, but don't skip ahead. Some people do. It's like, 30 seconds.
Do not skip ahead.
Because we're about to premiere our Zero Hour Strikes promo.
Woo!
This is it. Then we'll be back with the final feedback for First Strike the Invasion podcast, and we'll tell you how to follow us on to our new show. So stick around.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The time is out of joint.
The year is 1994, or 1944, or maybe 2994? Time is under threat, and history is falling apart. Who will survive this crisis, and how will history be changed for those that do? Zero Hour Strikes takes you back to that DC Comics crossover and covers the entire story, issue by issue, tie-in by tie-in, as the DC Universe goes down to zero. Join Bass and Siskoid at fireandwaterpodcast.com or on iTunes, Zero Hour Strikes, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Remember Legion.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow.
The Legion of Superheroes through the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, the Baxter series, 5 years later, the reboot, the three-boot, the retro-boot, the animated series. We have banded together as the Legion of Super Bloggers to cover it all. Seek us out at legionofsuperbloggers.blogspot.com.
Always have to say it that way.
Haven't you ever heard of a little thing called showmanship?
Final letters from the front.
Letters from the front!
Well, first, Bess, let's open the P.O. box, as the girls call it. We got some podcast farewell gifts.
Ooh.
This is one I gave to the girls already, but because Zoom, Yukinori, our good friend of the network, printed out his Zoom's Who.
Ooh.
His own issue of Who's Who with all the forgotten characters.
Oh, that's awesome.
So here's your copy.
Oh, very nice.
Everybody on our Canadian end of the network got one, so.
Very nice.
This is yours.
Back and boarded. Everything.
It doesn't do things halfway.
Oh, wow. This is awesome. This is very awesome.
So people who are, you know, listen to the Who's Who podcast know all about this. You know, he's been sending in these pages one episode at a time sort of thing. And here they are, all in the one.
Wow, there's
the one copy.
The human flying fish in there.
It's got characters forgotten by the original Who's Who, but it's also got, you know, Fire Shag and Aqua Rob and Professor Zoom himself. So we're not in there yet.
Ooh.
But Zoom is talking about doing a follow-up, the 90s loose leaf style, in which we might be featured. Who knows?
I enjoy that.
There was that in the P.O. box. And there was also a gift from Dr. Ange, who went to a convention. And this is a while ago. It's like last year, because we haven't done a show since October. But he got a couple of issues signed by Jam DeMatteis, writer of Justice League. So Justice League issues of the Invasion issues to Mike. I guess that's me. To Mike is the Invasion First Strike extra. Thank you, Dr. Ange. It's the one with Oberon on the cover. And here, this one says to Bass.
Oh, very nice.
Mateus, and it's the Injustice League issue.
Ah, this is awesome.
That we also covered as an Invasion Aftermath extra.
Oh, this is great. Wow. Why all the gifts? I didn't get you anything.
Sorry, Ange. But he gets to go to conventions all the time.
Yeah.
He gets to meet creators. He likes to do this.
And we're stuck in the Phantom Zone.
So. Yeah, it's kind of hard to do that here. We do have like these mini conventions, but it's very local, it's very regional.
Yeah.
So we don't never get to see
Mr. DeMatteis.
Big names.
No. Well, wow, this is awesome. Thank you very much, Ange. Thanks, Zoom.
So, and before we look at the specific comments on the last episode of First Strike, we want to thank Tom Panaris, who wanted to buy as many of the Invasion tie-ins as possible before listening.
Okay.
So you could read along. And so he only marathoned it recently, and he gave us a very nice notice on his blog, The Uncollecting.
Ooh.
So listen to this glowing excerpt. While Invasion does have its flaws, Siskoid and Bass in this podcast don't.
Ooh.
Too much. That's too much.
It's too much.
He says, they've got a great rapport with one another and genuinely come off as two longtime friends who are inviting us to come in, sit down, and talk comics.
You know what? That's exactly what it is.
It's pretty much that.
Yeah. If you had coffee, it would be perfect.
We don't want to step on Clinton Robinson's toes
at
Coffee and Comics.
I know.
So, and anyways, I like cream in my coffee.
Yeah.
And cream destroys your voice.
Yeah.
Any lactose will make you very phlegmy. This is an inside.
I'm always phlegmy. I love
phlegmy. So you can't eat a pizza and start podcasting. It's just a bad idea.
I know. So we drink black tea.
Let's look at comments at ironfirewaterpodcast.com or perhaps on other social media. Rob Kelly says, congrats on wrapping up, fellas. The best compliment I can pay the podcast is while I gave not a whit about Invasion as a comic book event, this show was always entertaining and engaging. I enjoyed the historical context you gave it and never missed an episode.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
He's just making sure we do our job right. David S. Gutierrez says, looking forward to the zero-hour epic you're about to tackle. I'm sure Bass will love it, given his anti-Thanagarian bias. Don't know if that's supposed to be sarcastic yet.
You know, I don't know.
Hawkman does feature. His history's screwed up.
Well, good, because he's screwed.
Joe X offers more Invasion semi-tie-ins. He says, Kurt Busiek's Power Company series had a series of one-shots giving the backgrounds of characters, and founder Josiah Power's issue was all about the gene bomb and its after effects. And then there's the Timberwolf miniseries that had some more left-behind Dominators as villains. First Strike's biggest fan, Michael Bailey, adds that he says, my favorite Invasion tie-in that was after the fact took place in Green Lantern Emerald Dawn 2. During a training session with Sinestro, newbie GL Hal Jordan drops in on negotiations between the Dominators, the Kuns, and the Okarans, and things go pear-shaped when Sinestro and Hal leave. One of the members says that someday an alliance between them will prove necessary. I thought it was pretty clever.
It is pretty clever.
Michelle Fief sent congratulations and a picture of Invasion-related trading cards, which we'll put on the show's image gallery. It's basically scenes by Bart Sears. Mike Zomkowski just bought his Zero Hour trade paperback, or at least at the time he wrote, you know, in preparation for the next show. Terry O'Malley says, "You guys sucked me in to being a regular listener to this podcast." I was sure he was saying, "You guys suck." Okay. And just yesterday, from our point of view, but like 3 or 4 days from yours, if you're listening on the day, Derek William Crabb wrote this from Heroes Con. "So I give Keith Giffen my posters to sign. And when I get to the last one, the Invasion promo poster, he says, 'You got every poster.' And he goes on to reveal an upcoming Invasion sequel with the Inferior Five. So he went, 'Is this officially announced? Do people know about this?' And Giffen says, 'You do now.'" But of course, we talked about this earlier.
Yeah, we did.
It was supposed to be like taking place in the late 80s, yeah, right after the Invasion.
Yeah.
After the gene bomb explodes.
It was supposed to be some kind of a Stranger Things-y type thing.
Right. Yeah. Right. Stranger Things meets Ambush Bug.
Or something. Yeah. Yeah.
With Invasion as a backdrop. So we did know about this, but I thought, you know, we thought it would come out like in the fall.
Yeah. Or not at all.
Or at this point, I'd given up hope. So it may mean that we have to do a bonus episode at some point.
Hey,
like a special.
I'd dig that. I'd like to hear some more Invasion stuff written recently, you know, instead of trying to fix the future like they did in Valor, you know, just looking back at the past and being able to create something nice. I think it'll be pretty cool.
Should be. I mean, it's Jeff Lemire is involved, so one of our Canadian comrades. So these are just excerpts. Thanks to all the well-wishers out there, including Mark Baker Wright, Chris Franklin, Tim Price, Jimmy McGlinchey, Boston Moss, Mike Z. And that's just the people who responded on the network itself. So thanks to all the nice folks who followed us through social media as well. What happens now?
What does happen now? We have a new project. We have a new show coming up.
Yeah. So it is not going to be on this feed.
It is not. It's going to be a new feed.
It's a new feed. I mean, I don't know how long it'll take to set up. You just heard the promo. The promo will be the first episode, basically, on that feed just by itself. So by the time we set that up, Apple Podcasts approves it, the feed is on. It's going to happen this week.
Okay. Well, it's not too long.
Yeah. Enough, so you got to check out the site for that announcement. You can subscribe. It's going to be a lot like Invasion. But I think we're going to do more comics at a time.
Yeah.
I think we do plan to do all the Zero issues as well.
Oh, yeah.
And that's going to take forever.
It will.
Unless we batch them up. So.
Yeah. And batch them. We're going to batch them. It's going to be maybe denser shows.
Mm-hmm. We did shows where, let's talk about how we feel about Superman.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that again.
Exactly.
So we can do 2 Superman issues, bang, bang, in the same episodes. I think that's what we're.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for. Bang bangs. We're doing bang bangs. 2 main courses, 2 different restaurants.
Yeah, that's right.
We're
doing bang bangs. So thanks for listening. Thanks for your patience as well.
Yeah, and thanks for all the comments and the feedback, and that was greatly appreciated.
And thanks for subscribing to the next show, Zero Hour Strikes.